Thanks again to everyone that's helped us open the meeting by reading, and take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Glad that you're with us. Huge welcome to any visitors and a massive welcome to any newcomers that might be in the room. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So we are a speaker meeting, and it falls on me to introduce our speaker this evening. What can I say? Stepped in at very short notice, which is typical of this individual. Will always be willing to be of service when the opportunity arises. And many might not realise, but he was actually integral in the very first meeting of the Highlands and Islands Groups and Narcotics Anonymous, which actually were a live hybrid meeting with a convention in the UK. It was a very emotional day. I do remember it very well. It sticks out. I've had the privilege of knowing him for a number of years since before that. And we've been friends for an awfully long, for a long time, well over a decade. I love him to bits, and I'm looking forward to hearing his story. I've heard it before, but I know there'll be bits that I haven't heard before. So without any further ado, I'm going to hand you over to Rene, who's going to share his experience, strength and hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever he's comfortable with. So, Ren, the floor is yours, my friend. Please share with us. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. And yeah, my name's Rene, and I'm an addict.
Hello,
hey, Rene. Oh, Rene. Hello, brother.
Hello, hello, Jim. Yeah, distinctive voices. So it's been a while since I've been on a Blue Jeans meeting, and I've been doing a lot of face to face meetings. Good to be aware that you're all here, because it's a non-video meeting. So if your ear's a mess, then that's perfectly fine. And I did put my teeth in for the meeting. It's just habit, really, you know, kind of thing. I suppose I needn't have done. It's to sound a little bit better with the teeth. It's not just about the looking aesthetically pleasing, you know what I mean? But So the readings, you know, I love the readings, and you know, I suppose if I had a favourite reading, it's why we're here, but also like the steps, you know, how it works, and you know, my basic text and my most recent one is like a colouring book. I've highlighted lots of stuff, and anyway, so you know, I'm 62 years old at the moment, and when Steve sent me the message, I just felt like I don't really feel like doing this, you know. And I felt a bit flat today, and went for a walk this morning. You know, there's no obsession to use, and went for a walk. I was going to go on a bike, but then invited my partners to just go for a walk. And halfway through, you know, a couple of kilometres in, so we looked for a calf, so we had something to eat, and then kind of walked back, you know. It's kind of nice, you know. So I was thinking about doing a meeting in London, Islington, but, you know, anyway, but Simon kind of got things together, because it wasn't really much of a plan. It was just an idea. But, well, if we do go now, and all being well and catching the buses and connections in, yeah, we'll make it with about 7 minutes to spare. And I thought, well, that, you know, knowing London transport the way it is at the moment, it probably, you know, anyway, I didn't have, anyway, so we just cancelled that. And I just started to feel a bit kind of sort of yucky and a bit kind of, so perhaps it might help, you know what I mean? I'm armed with a cup of tea and I've drunk that, the orange juice. So, yeah, so it's not a can of super tenants, you know, I've got as my prop today. It's the program Narcotics Anonymous, and you know, my power, and you know, the people, the fellowship, you know, and of which you guys are part of that. And you know, and thank God the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using, you know. If it had sort of subheadings and stuff like that, I think my membership might have been revoked a long time ago. But anyway, so I haven't used. May the 9th was my last bit of methadone, 2004. And so May the 10th is my first day clean. And so I think that's about 6,690 days clean, I think. Based on, I'm sure yesterday it was 6,689, which is 18 years and 3 months and some days in it. And, but essentially, I'm a white keyring man, so I just try to, you know, regurgitate this or just recycle it on a, you know, daily basis. This morning I woke up and said some prayers and just embraced the quietness, the stillness, you know, the space and the solitude, and just, you know, I didn't switch the telly on, I didn't put the kettle on, the bath wasn't running, you know, I just sat still, you know. So that was kind of, you know, that's what I do. And then usually, as I did this morning, I read the Just for a Day thing, and September 3rd, you know, I didn't really kind of go along with it. You know, I've got willingness, I've got loads of willingness, you know what I mean? But I have this thing, which I shared with my sponsor when I came across the question again in step one. And I've just been through the steps recently and going through traditions at the minute. But what happened was the answer was like, yeah, I've got willingness, but I do detect some internal resistance. And my sponsor said to me, well, don't worry, Renee, we've all got that. So that was kind of like kind of reassuring, you know what I mean? I'm in the right place. And yeah, that sort of stuff. So me using, I mean, what happened? The other day I come across a photo, I think I'll just have a look at it, just like, right, it's a black and white photograph. My mother's in it, my brother's in it, and my grandmother's in it. It's in Holland, and in a place called Winschoten. And there's a duck. There's some guy here from who's in Holland anyway. And this is I must be two or three. I was born in 1960, yeah. So three or four, I think. Yeah, about so 63, 64, possibly 65. And there's another lady in it. She's still alive. She's 96. She's a friend of my mother's younger sister, who's both 96. And those two kids, I guess they're still alive. They're about my age. But anyway, my brother passed away when I was 5 years clean, back in 2009. And my father, he passed away in 1998, 6 years before I cleaned up my mother, or our mother. That's Edwin and my mother. She passed away when I was 7 years old, and she was a born-again Christian, and my father was a policeman. And I think he was a traffic cop, you know. Yeah, he had a push bike in the 60s, and they didn't have the walkie-talkies, he had a whistle. Anyway, he's a nice guy, you know, and, you know, like we'd go down to the park and stuff like that, and he'd carry me on his shoulders, kind of like, it was quite frightening up there, but I felt quite safe, you know. It was my dad, you know, he was the strongest man in the world and all that stuff. So when my mother died, it kind of, you know, really affected me, I guess. Within a few months, I started stealing sweets and shit like that, really. And, you know, I was 67, 69, I got my father remarried, stepmother, who was an atheist. So there was the chalk and cheese thing, you know, and, you know, where there was no room for swearing in our household, there was lots of, you know, a few expletives were being kind of like, you know, issued, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, I guess I become addicted to thieving, and fast forward a bit through my teens, you know, the drugs come along, the drink, drugs come along, the destructive behaviour, smashing school windows, putting bins through places of learning like the library. Strange enough, I do like reading, you know. And I suppose that kind of, you know, hurt people possibly come into play, and one or two fires were set here and there. But but addiction, I suppose, you know, the first, I always thought it was the heroin, which incidentally wasn't a drug that I was, you know, in my eyes, destined to take. I thought, you know, it's not what I'm going to do here, you know. I'll stop when I'll, this is during the 70s and early 80s, you know, but I'm not ready to stop yet. I feel, you know, I'm enjoying it, you know. It was like dope and speed, various types of speed and acid and all that sort of stuff, you know what I mean? And, you know, I was kind of, and of course, Erwin did come onto the estate, but he was like, oh, look at them. So I was already judging people, and I was, you know, in those days, I felt better than, and instead of, you know, when the time I come into the rooms, I sort of felt quite often less than and quite inadequate, you know what I mean? So, yeah, and I come in with this thing they labelled as arrested development. So, yeah, I phoned up the helpline on the 22nd of October 2003, and I was confronted with things I ain't seen before, which was clean addicts. You know, I was on methadone at the time. So, of course, yeah, the heroin did, I did use heroin. I did start putting needles in me, and I know it's not about that, but this, that's just part of the progression of it. You know, a kind of, you know, I went to jail and, you know, and while I was in jail, let's get back to the other bit, the meeting bit in a minute. But, you know, while I was in jail, my wife at the time picked up the needle, and rest her soul, she's no longer with us due to an heroin overdose Christmas Eve 1994. But yeah, my mission in my mind was, because when I went away, we had a son and he was about a year old, just over. You know, I got married in 82, and March and August 1982, I ended up in Pentonville prison. And, you know, time I got out of there the following year, you know, I think it was, you had to do 8 months, but they bung 6 weeks on top for misbehaviour, so that sort of thing. Anyway, so she picked up the needle, and my mission was, I'm going to go out, I'm going to go straight, no drugs, and I'm going to get a job, and I'm going to get her off the gear, right? You know, that's what I'm going to do. You know, I didn't realise that I was powerless over people, and I didn't realise that I was powerless myself. You know what I mean? You know, I've come across the word, but not in the context that I'm powerless, you know what I mean? I never really thought about it too much, really, kind of. But I've been using every day for a long time, and the breaks would be in jail when there was what we call a famine. There's a famine in the jail, you know, and couldn't get none. Or outside in society, you know, there was, you know. But anyway, I come out, and within days, I ended up rolling up my sleeve and, you know, giving her the green light. And when she done it, and then sort of further on down the line, as one of my kind of traits was blaming other people. But then, you know, I have to take responsibility for rolling up my sleeve. So that's how that happened. And sort of subsequently, I went on a bender, which lasted 21 years, you know, doing needlework, you know, and the odd pipe here and there. And of course, come across a crack cocaine and it mixed together. And I was, you know, and the reason I'd done those, because I thought everything sort of had a reason, you know, was that it felt like speed, and the quality of speed was going downhill. So it seemed like a kind of sensible, yeah, fucking hell, how can I use sensible in the same sentence, but a sensible transition from amphetamine sulfate to go to, you know, heroin and cocaine. And, you know, but, you know, I mean, you know, I can't remember turning anything down, really. You know what I mean? If someone turned up at my door and they had some acid, then, yeah, okay, let's, you know. So I suppose I was greedy. But, you know, for things like that that seemed to cause destruction and to myself. You know, and I, you know, through time, I'd hear things like, oh, you're your own worst enemy. Man, it wasn't just said to me. I'd hear other people get the same kind of thing. You're your own worst enemy, you know. And school reports was like, could do better. So, you know, and it was like my life, see, and this was the thing. So as I was growing up in this environment with a policeman, a stepmother I didn't appreciate at all, I kind of, you know, as I was getting older, I become more lippy, you know what I mean, and kind of, you know, well, you know, you won't be out. It ain't always going to be like this, where I'm going to be the sort of person who gets kind of, you know, told what to do, you know. And I remember listening to Animals, Pink Floyd, you know, and it's a really kind of sad thing when I look at it. But I'd be turning up the volume on Dogs, I think it was, and it's the end bit of Dogs, Pink Floyd, who was born in a house full of pain, who was only a stranger at home. So there's lots of, you know, messages, and there's lots of, you know, poor me, look what you've done. done to me. You know, no one's taking any notice. No one listened. Why would they? I was very rebellious. I was acting out. You know, I was kind of, you know, I had that kind of yobbo kind of nature. And you can't tell me what to do. It's my life. And you watch me fuck it up. What I didn't, that last bit, I didn't, you know, I'd do what I want with it, but I didn't realise. And I remember my father saying to me one day when I went down there to pawn some money, and he said all this drug taking, he goes, look, listen, he goes, why don't you just jump in front of a train and end it all? He goes, I don't see why I've got to watch you take yourself apart piece by piece, day by day. So that was a bit harsh, you know what I mean? You know, but I suppose I can understand that, you know. You know, I was his favourite, you know, and I was just throwing my life away. I didn't think I was throwing my life away, but it is, you know, another, I'd come out of jail, started using, you know, the class A's intravenously, and you know, I quickly ended up in jail again. And usually it wasn't because of the crime, it was usually because, you know, I was just failing to appear. You know, I had no kind of sense of kind of responsibility, you know what I mean? Well, you know, if you want me in court, you're going to have to find me, you know, and good luck with that, because most of the time I'll be in someone's loft, a different address, or, you know, a fluid, you know, lots of little bolt holes here and there. Of course, the long arm of the law would, you know, find me ultimately, but, you know, yeah, it was... I suppose it was it felt like less risk than just showing up and sort of surrendering, you know, the idea of surrendering to custody or whatever was like, you know, kind of a bit distasteful. So I weren't up for that. But anyway, I did end up in what happened in 1989. I ended up getting 2.5 years for shoplifting. I suppose it was the longest sentence I'd heard of anyone doing shoplifting, you know, and I was a bit resentful. I didn't sort of say I'm resentful, I just had the ump, because the guy in the bed next to me was doing half that sentence for manslaughter. He had a fight with his father-in-law, you know, girl, a future father-in-law who died as they fell down the stairs and he broke his neck and died, which was an accident, obviously, but he got manslaughter and he got 15 months, and I'm doing 30 months for basically stealing things out of shops. But anyway, so at the end of that, towards the end of that, I'm looking at getting what they call straight parole, and they wouldn't give it to me, which was kind of, you know, so again, you know, that sort of hate and that kind of towards, you know, when the police ever drove past, I'd just snarl at them and look at them at filth and pig, all the names you can imagine, you know what I mean? And, you know, separated myself. I didn't realise it, you know, separated myself from my family. You know, for the people who love me, you know, I mean, they love me, they still love me, and my father would still love me, you know, just didn't love my behaviour, and you know? I knew there was different things, you see what I mean? But anyway, so, you know, I ended up having parole, but with conditions, and the conditions was, well, you can either stay here, or you can go to rehab, and I thought, I didn't really want to go to rehab. I mean, who wants to go to rehab? You know, you want to go to rehab, but I didn't want to stay in jail. And so it was what they call we called it a jail swerve. But while I was there, I did think, this feels kind of all right to be here. I was in a place called the New Forest in Hampshire in southern England. And there was a lot of wild horses around there. It was like a national trust. And I did start thinking, this is nice. I did enjoy, you know, the food. I put on a bit of weight, and I vowed never to use ever again. Towards the end of it, I expedited my release from there, because after a while I got fed up with all the groups and stuff, and I went to the probation office, so I want to get out of here. And I ain't heard about NA in the way that I know. I mean, Narcotics Anonymous was mentioned to me by this guy in about 1979, 1980, but, you know, I said to him, what's that? Is that a place we can get drugs in secret? I mean, I didn't know, and I don't know what he said. I didn't really listen to it. Well, I think we just scored some, it was back in 1980, some speckled beans. He's like, just speed tablets. But anyway, so I come out of this, but I said I want to get out. And we had this last group. I remember them telling me, you're going to use. You know, you kind of, I said, would you know? You don't even know me. I've only been here, what, 2.5 months? You know what I mean? You don't know me. I said, I'll tell you what, give me your phone number. And what I'll do is give it a week. I'll phone you back up just to let you know how wrong you was, right? So, God, mate, just talking about this stuff, I can remember how full of attitude I was around everything, you know what I mean? I thought I knew best. And anyway, the day I got out, within half an hour, I've got a can of Super Tenants in me hand, a strong lager. And I bought another one for the train journey. So I bought 2 cans and I'm drinking it. And I blame that on the train, you know, because I had to wait. You know, all that entitlement, oh, it's all coming out now. Like, you know, I had to wait half an hour for the train. You know what I mean? 25 minutes, half an hour. So I pop over the road, get a sandwich. And I think that probably comes under in rehab as a SIDS or something, seemingly irrelevant. Anyway, I've gone there, bought the sandwich, but these cans of Tenants were winking at me. So I've had the thing. And of course, I didn't make the call. I'm not going to ring them up and say, guess what, you was right. You know what I mean? It was just, you know, so anyway, so I was back in the, you know, the obsession returned. I've got to London. I've got a couple of amps, overdosed in the city, and, you know, I was brought round by somebody who wanted to use the toilet that I was occupying, you know, and gone over in Cambridge Circus near Soho. And, in Soho. So what happened was, I just carried on, and 4 years later I ended up in a Bexley nut house or mental hospital, which is now a housing estate, but we done a detox in there, and you know, and I thought I'd be all right, and they said, look, we'll get you out in the new year. But what had happened is me ex-part me wife, we had split up, mate. That was all dysfunctional, it was all over the place. We was sleeping with other partners and all that sort of stuff. Occasionally, when we was at a loose end, we might re-engage and all that. It was just the kids had gone into care during the late 80s, you know what I mean, that sort of thing. You know, we had kids as if that was going to be the solution. We got stopped and while she was pregnant, didn't happen. Gets born, we got stopped now, didn't happen. 4 years later, we'll have another kid because the first must be, you know, in some idea that it's going to make us stop, and it didn't. They went into care, got stopped now, didn't stop. You know, this is like late 80s, early 90s, and, you know, so 94, I've come out there, and I've got another, you know, had another drink, so I'm just staying on the drink now. I think I've got it under control. My wife, a fella had gone over and died, and 4 days later, she'd done the same, 4 or 5 days on Christmas Eve, as I mentioned earlier. So, yeah, fast forward, I'm in an hospital in 2003, done a few more jails, you know, petty crime, acquisitive crime, you're finding ways and means to get more. And there was another patient in there I'd used with, and started telling me about myself, you know, that I was manipulative, resentful, and all this. I thought, drop me out. I didn't look. Have you got any gear? That's all I want to know, you know what I mean? And controlling and all that stuff. And anyway, this person gave me the NA helpline number at the time. Now, I'd already been to an NA meeting in 2000, and I just went round this women's refuge to use some gear with a female friend who was bang on the gear. And, you know, in my mind, I'm looking after him, you know. Fuck knows he was looking after me, but anyway. So, I just, at the end of it, she's gone, look, it's on top. You know, you've been seen coming in and out of it, so you're going to have to go. I said, well, it was pissing, you know, tipping down with rain, you know what I mean? I mean, it was sheets, right? And I said, look, where am I going to go? She goes, well, I'll come with you, if you like. I said, well, where are we going to go? She said, well, there's an NA meeting. Just over there. I said, where's it? Through the arch, under there. I said, what's all that about? You know, what's, you know. She said, well, we'll stay out of the rain and you can get a cup of tea. So I thought, I went, okay then, that's good, stay out of the rain. And so my tradition free would have been the only requirement for membership is to stay out of the rain and grab a cup of tea. I had no, you know. So I was in an NA meeting. And in that meeting, I see the person who I see in 2-3 years later, she'd relapsed and she'd gone into, was in the hospital and who'd give me the NA helpline number. And as I went, what happened? She said, oh, I picked up, you know, after a year. So I got lost again and was in there for, you know, blood poisoning. And I think there was a broken needle in the groin or something. So, you know, So I had done another meeting in between that moment. That was in Belmarsh Prison. So I found myself back in the system and there was an advert on the wall, Narcotics Anonymous meeting. I thought, yeah, I know all about them. I want to get there. So I'm in the meeting and I'm just talking about, I was hoping to get some drugs in the meeting, you know, it's like a long shot and go down. And because the first meeting, you know, I was gouching out. I didn't know the lyrics at the end. I stayed for it, you know, Serenity Prayer. The rain had stopped and it was great. So, you know, but I didn't go back apart from when I was in jail. I went back and it was, the prison was really close to, just across the road over the wall was a guy I used to score off. And that was the right tease, the feeling that it's, you know, it's like that line in a Tom Petty record, isn't it? To do with, I think, love, I suppose. How's it running? American Girl. God, it's so painful when something is so close but still so far out of reach. And I really felt that then, do you know what I mean? And, you know, I didn't get drugs. I got an handful of dog ends, like, from, you know, smoked cigarettes, the dregs of it, you know. So I've got them in the hand with some sugar, you know, a couple of spoons of sugar. I'm trying to hold that in the other hand and get to the cell, you know what I mean? So I can have a cup of tea and break them up and make a roll up. So I weren't the most influential kind of prisoner. I was kind of, you know, on the lower strata, if you like, you know what I mean? And yeah, picking up doggings off the wing and, you know, the shame that goes with that when you get caught, like, swooper, you know what I mean? Because yeah, it's just, so there was a lot of humiliation and a lot of, you know, the stuff with, and all that. So anyway, I've come out of it, you know, I broke my neck in 2003 with a kind of a compact fracture, C5, where they screwed this thing into my head, like a cage, scaffolding, I call it. I think they call it a Bramer halo. And that would, I mean, I didn't want that either. But a guy said, listen, you don't have to have it done. But if you don't, 99.9%, you'll end up quadriplegic. You know, no use of your limbs, you know, a neck down paralyzed. And my first thought was like, well, how the fuck am I going to use? Do you know what I mean? And then, you know, other thoughts, you know, of a carnal nature, you know, how am I going to do this? Am I going to, you know, probably the things that probably, you know, probably, well, they're not, definitely not a priority today, put it that way. So, yeah, so when he told me that, I suppose you could call that a sobering thought, you know. I kind of, okay, you better, you know, we'd do that. And so, and it worked and I've been all right since. And I, you know, I'd reduced from my methadone and my benzos at the time and I've come off them, and I'm still on a methadone and I'd have the odd in the hospital. Oh God, I'd go out down to the hospital shop, thieve stuff out of there. And sell it to other, you know, disturb other people's hospital visits. Excuse me, do you want to buy some chocolates? Excuse me, do you want some coffee? Do you want some links after, you know, that sort of thing, you know. And then go and score, you know what I mean, and come back to the hospital. And so, in those moments, those weeks, I felt like I was coming near the end of it. My neck was a mess. My life was a mess. I remember one particular moment when I just had an it. And I just done it in the groin and it just turned the light on, left the toilet door locked and just could feel the stuff. But I started to sob and I just felt like, you know, I don't know what, you know, and then, and I still didn't stop. And I mean, it was a few weeks later where I thought, where's that number? And I transferred it from my back pocket into the drawer amongst some needles and charcoal burnt spoons and stuff. And, found it and rung them And I got to a meeting in Blackheath on a Wednesday night. I mentioned it before the meeting. It's my own group. And, you know, from there, it's kind of, you know, there was some guy in there who still comes to the meeting. And he said something like, you know, I'm, you know, withhold his name, but I'll change the name. He said, my name's Paulie and I'm an addict and I'm 1,479 days clean. And I thought, God, what did he fucking say? I thought, 1 year's 365, two's 730. It's about for only, anyway, I just thought, no, I was listening to the next guy then. And but at the end of the meeting, I went to this other guy. I said, here, mate, how clean are you? He said, I'm 9.5 years. I said, what do you mean, nine? What, not even a drink or a puff? He said, no. He said, one day at a time. And, you know, one, I said, what? I just, you know, could probably sense, you know, it's like, what's he on, you know? And he said, come over here. And he took me to the literature table and he picked up a Where to Find, which is like a meeting directory for the UK. And he wrote on a back, got a pen, he wrote his name, number, and he wrote these words, pick up the phone, not the drugs, right? And he said, I said, what's that? He said, well, if you, you know, try and do 90 meetings in 90 days and, and you know, if you look in there, you'll find a meeting. There's a few meetings in London each week. And so I did. Showed me brother, rest his soul, Edwin, who wasn't an addict. He was a Christian too. And he said, well, his eyebrows raised. And I said, there's people in there and they're clean. And nothing at all. No methadone, no puff, no drink. And I said, there's two people in there I used to use with. And they put on a bit of weight. They look dead clean. You know, it was a, you know, sparkle in their eyes, and they seemed happy to see one another, you know. So anyway, I looked for this the next day. I picked up my methadone and got a few cans of cider and done my methadone. I had a drink on the way to the meeting, got to the meeting in St. Clement's Psychiatric Hospital, which is in Mile End in East London. Don't think it's there anymore, but I mean, what drew me to it was the fact that the venue wasn't a church or a community centre, but a psychiatric hospital for him. You know, I just felt kind of, I don't know, it's just terrible, isn't it, really, when you think of it, you know, like at home with the lunatics, you know. So I've gone there, and again, there was loads of addicts in this, quite a big meeting, and I got me tea. And during the meeting, someone tapped me on the shoulder, and I couldn't turn my head around because of this contraption on my head, that, scaffolding for the neck injury, you know. And so I've had to turn myself slowly, the whole body. And then the guy who tapped me on the shoulder leant back, and it was the guy I'd seen the night before, 9.5 years clean man, you know. Big thumbs up, and really pleased to see me, which is, you know, novel. At the end of the meeting, he took me over to another literature table on the which was on a pool table, and bought me fifth edition Basic Text, which is my partner's just out there on the bench. She's in an online meeting somewhere. She's got that wrapped around her at the moment. I've got six here, and it's like a colouring book. And yeah, it's just heavily highlighted, you know. Anyway, I started doing meetings. And, I remember promising next week, you know, in one meeting, I said, oh, it works by suggestions. I keep hearing this word suggestions. I need a box full of them. and next week, and I was gotten down to 15 mil by the time I phoned the helpline. I'm doing really well. And that's why I didn't phone the helpline to start with, because I thought I was going to. But then I scored, you know, what happened? I watched a game of football. David Beckham missed the penalty. I thought, fuck it, I'll go and get some gear. So, that, you know, again, you know, I'm blaming anything and everything. You know, David Beckham missing a penalty. The fact that we qualified on the strength of a draw was neither here nor there. He's hit the ball over the bar and I'm going to score. And so I've got, you know, got brown and white and all that. So that was then. So it was kind of, yeah, it's just kind of, you know, I just, you know, so I found a number up and, you know, and it was like the last chance saloon. And I found that every time I got to these meetings, which is every day, you know, next week I said, I'm going to be on 10 mil. The week after, I remember sharing this clearly one time, then 5 mil. And in the fourth week, I'll be on no mil. And I then I'll be marching towards that 30 day, because at the time I'm just picking up white key rings, because all I want is one day. But I had this plan. Anyway, 3 weeks down the line, I'm still on 15 mil. 4 weeks down the line, I'm on 15 mil, but I'm down on the local station carrying the message with a can of beer in my hand. So, no, I don't want any gear, like, I don't want any brown, but I'll, you know, but I was still, you know, absence. I just didn't have my head around it. And then I got with this girl who gave me the number, like, I suppose, Fort Ode or something, I don't know, because she was in a mess. And I'm trying to save her, but what happened is that my habit went up, my methadone script went up, and in the end, you know, I ended up, you know, on a going into detox. H&I was coming in, and people was going, "Where's your at?" referring to my scaffolding, you know, and that's come off now. And but by then, I was kind of pretty much cooked. You know, I'd done a detox. You know, coming out, I had to go to rehab, and H&I was coming in there, and you know, I kind of knew. I said, "Okay, I know I'm not meant to say I'm never going to use again, but if I do this a day at a time, I know that I haven't got to." And I arrived in rehab 16 days clean on May the 26th, cleaned up on May the 10th, 2004. And I've had my moments in the rooms. You know, I mean, since coming in, I went back to school, went to college. I didn't like school, so I had some resistance again around that stuff. I had a lot of resistance around doing voluntary work. I was like, well, how much does it pay? Why do that? You know, I've always done something for a pound note. You know, I've got to have something out of it. And then after about 2.5 years and moving up to the West Midlands, someone offered me some work in a rehab voluntarily. So I went, okay. He said, I'll give you a lift. And we reckon you anyway. Went in there, get a lift back. I was fed. And, you know, and it was just nice to help people. You know what I mean? I've still, you know, I put my fellowship first. I'm not one of them guys who went in and did go into counselling, but at the forefront of my mind, I mean, I kept, in the early days, whatever you put before your recovery, you're going to lose it. You know what I mean? And, well, my recovery, I thought, well, Formula One, you know, first on the grid, second on the grid, third, fourth, fifth on the grid, and the rest, you know, okay, relationships crept into it. You know what I mean? And that sort of stuff has proven to be probably the most challenging thing. People talking about me, sort of bottom of the league, really. But, you know, but the thing is, what I heard in step one is that, you know, I didn't have to use, because it says on page 20 in step one, it goes something about powerlessness. And it goes, I think on the second paragraph down, it goes about, you know, the inability to stop using, even with the greatest willpower and the most sincere desire, is what we mean when we say, we have absolutely no choice. But this is the killer, this line after it goes, however, we do have a choice after we stop trying to justify using. So everything was blame. It was this. It was a trigger. It was a lie. It was a condition. It was a reservation. It was all that kind of gear. And on the following page, 21, there's five lines. It goes, until we let go of our reservations, no matter what they are, the foundation of our recovery is in danger. Reservations rob us of the benefits that this program has to offer, and ridding ourselves of all reservations, we surrender. Then and only then, and I know what that means, then and only then, it goes on to say, can we be helped to recover from disease of addiction? So, and I heard about this thing called the No Matter What Club, and I thought, well, this is what they're talking about. And this means that I can do anything, because I can do anything I want here, but you know, I ain't got to use on it. So I could end up going to jail. I could end up, okay, you want a guilt rent, but remember what it felt like when you lost the other one that you kind of, you know, give your time to, you kind of, you know, give your heart to, you know, it's, you know, or when someone died, I just slaughtered myself and just went to oblivion. So I thought, okay, but I've seen people, I've heard people now with breakups, with losing people, with seeing their own children die, you know what I mean? And coming to meetings bleeding, you know, emotionally kind of, just, you know, and not using. So I thought, you know, and people would say, I know probably in a different context, but I remember being in a treatment centre and they say, TRS, trust, risk and share. So I thought, okay, you're going to take a risk and do this and do that. So I thought, I'm going to take a risk and have a relationship. And, you know, of course, you know, there plenty of money because, you know, I didn't know I have one clean, you know, so, but I suppose I was pig-headed and single-minded, and I try to graft, you know, like plants and trees. And I try to graft hedonistic values on the spiritual principles and try to mix the two together. And they seem to be, they seem to collide. God, you know what I mean? But anyway, I'm sitting on a sip of tea. How long got left? About 5 minutes, Steve.
Oh, yep, you're Carol. Letting... Yep. Go yeah, for it.
Cool. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, the outside things, I've got, you know, I've got some bits of paper that says I'm this and that, you know, counsellor, start and done this level two, and then I'm health and social care, I've got some more bits of paper that have my name on it and sort of basically saying, well done, you know, and you return to society, I guess, productive member, I suppose, was kind of like the, you know, the unwritten words in between everything, you know what I mean, And then I went to university and got a foundation degree in addictions counseling and an honours degree in it. And then, you know, and I worked in a couple of rehabs, three rehabs in the UK. And then I've done a day programme. I was working in Harare for 3 months in 2017. Come back from there. And then there was the bus driving thing. And I've done, you know, because, you know, I applied for some jobs in the prisons here. I'm kind of glad I didn't get them in a way. But I ended up, what can I do now? Because when I come into the rooms, I didn't have a driving license. But since then, I'd accrued a driving license. I've driven another job I'd done with sales. I tell you what, this is the thing. Selling stolen goods was one of the easiest things I've ever done. Selling straight goods was just, you know, sorry, we've got a supplier. So I had a lot of rejection in that year, which we're not done that. But, you know, it's the sales, yeah, but... Bus driving, you know, the exposure to the traffic, the shift work, it just, you know, it disrupted my circadian rhythm, or so I told the manager. And, you know, I was 58 when I took that job. And so I ended up leaving there, got a medical discharge due to ill health. So I've been through a couple of things. There were some, you know, I suppose extracurricular activities, I suppose more relationship stuff. And, you know, I've been in a bad place and, you know, resorted to punching myself in the head when I was coming up to 15 years or just past 15 years. And, you know, I survived that. I picked up the phone. This was one of the first messages I got from the guy who gave me the where to find. And he wrote, pick up the phone, not the drugs. You know, I've done that a few times, being able to do that. And on this crucial moment, I was bleating and babbling and crying and, you know, pacing in my flat. And I phoned this guy, Georgie, and said, after about 20 minutes of pacing and driving myself mad, I said, what am I going to do? He said, Ren, he said, how about do nothing? And just then I just stood stock still with a phone in my hand, stopped pacing. Deep breath, deep sigh. Several times I went, God, why didn't I think of that? And, you know, in that moment, I had the freedom. In fact, I can be disturbed by my own voice when I'm hit up and I'm just gassing. And, you know, when I stop talking, you know, I experience some sort of peace. And so I did find that somewhere in the literature. I think it's on page 76. In fact, I know it is. And Living Clean. It says sometimes doing nothing is the most spiritual thing we can do. It come a bit late, but better late than never, because I've had a few kickoffs in meetings. And if anyone's here who has been here while I've, you know, misbehaved and hurled expletives, I sincerely and deeply apologise for that. You know, I was wrong, you know, and for doing that. And as I say earlier, when I started that, thank God that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using, because what I was getting was, okay, some... understandably, like as I would sort of retaliate, and I've done that kind of thing too. And but you know, the main thing is that runs through it, always keep coming back, you know. And before I go, I suppose it's here in Recovery and Relapse on page 77, it says, although all addicts are basically the same in kind, we do as individuals differ in degree of sickness and rate of recovery. Now, you know, I mean, that differs from day to day as well. And, you know, for me, I strongly believe that, you know, while I do get more experience along the way and I do feel at peace with myself in this last year of my driving's become less erratic, and you know, to do nothing, I haven't got to sort of gesticulate or shout at other drivers or tailgate them. I feel a lot more chilled, and I suppose it's because I just embrace those principles. You know, restraint is one of them, which is probably the one that helps me, you know, a lot above it, because I've put myself in vulnerable situations. You know, the mask situation, you know, it was like, well, if anyone tries to force me to wear a mask or physically remove me from a meeting, I'll kill you. Which, in a room full of, you know, recovering addicts, but violent criminals and whatnot, it's probably not the most, you know, probably not one of my better moves. But, you know, it turned out okay, and caused me step 8 and step 9 and, you know, subsequent step 10s have kind of, you know, and the making of the amends has kind of given me a lot of kind of freedom. And not just the freedom, but relief, you know. So I know what it feels like, that feeling of relief, you know. So I suppose I'm a grateful recovering addict. I'm also, I'm kind of like a relieved addict, you know what I mean? I embrace that feeling of, you know, not getting in the ring as much as I did. And I suppose, yeah, there's only one place where my life is, and that's here right now. So, you know, if you caught me here right now while I was just turning the air blue, then you'd be forgiven for thinking that my life is, my recovery is all in pieces. But, you know, it probably wouldn't be the case. It'd probably just be a moment. Kind of caught me at a good moment, even though I didn't want to do the share at, say, 4 o'clock or whenever it was. I thought, I didn't really feel like doing this, but it's really helped me. And so thanks for asking again, Stephen. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And, yeah, essentially, I'm a white keyring man. And, you know, I aim to get my nut on the pillar clean tonight. And I reckon I'll be able to do that. And, but of course, with your help. And you know, because I wouldn't have been able to do this by myself, because, you know, my experience has shown me that all efforts to do, you know, to get clean, stop using, turn my life around, have been, well, futile. So, yeah, thank you very much. Leave it there.